Was A Quiet Place inspired by Signs, It Comes at Night, and War for the Planet of the Apes? Was Ready Player One influenced by Avatar, Wreck-It Ralph, and The Last Starfighter? Is The Hurricane Heist more influenced by Sharknado or Geostorm? These are the kinds of questions my guest co-hosts and I discuss on my podcast, Piecing It Together. Every week, we look at a new movie and try to figure out what other movies inspired it, whether it's the story, the character development, tone, or even use of music. Every movie was influenced by something that came before, and we want to figure out what. Check out Piecing It Together on your favorite podcast app or check us out on piecingpod.com. You can also follow us on social media at piecingpod. Piecing It Together is a part of the All Points West Podcast Network.
Well, hello, Kirk Fitzpatrick.
Hello, Les Kirkendall Barrett.
Hello, Les Kirkendall Barrett and Kurt Fitzpatrick. I almost forgot your name there for a second.
It's your favorite day of the week, the day that we talk about a lifetime of Hallmark, where we talk about movies on Hallmark and the Lifetime channel.
You know, I realize it is weeks like this where this is my favorite day of the week because it's the day where I don't have to actually watch the Hallmark movie, which is the day before usually.
Now, I'm going to be honest with you guys. Mm-hmm. This movie was boring as F.
Oh, we know. We sat through it.
Oh, yeah. It's not like we're not going to believe you.
But.
Wait, twist my arm. I want to hear a strong argument, Les.
But.
Now, you can see this at home, people, but it looks like Les is holding up a piece of drop ceiling in the image. Oh, there he is. Okay, yeah. Good.
Because I'm on my iPad.
Okay.
Because my computer is being.
I don't know what that. Oh, I see. It is part of a ceiling.
It is part of a ceiling.
Yeah. It's not a drop ceiling either. Okay.
It's my dining room ceiling.
Okay.
So anyway, this movie was boring, but I think for a Hallmark movie, this movie was very controversial.
Okay.
It was.
Oh, I think I could see why. Yeah.
On many levels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was an anomaly.
Yes.
But it was boring. My those movies.
Before we even like get into the minutiae of it, my overall take on this movie is there was a point in time before now where Hallmark was making a broader variety of the kinds of movies that they show, and it wasn't basically the same formula for every single one, and this felt like it was probably even a big swing for that era of Hallmark.
Yeah, well... I'm glad they found their groove. Let's just say that.
Now, was this even produced by Hallmark?
Yeah.
This looks like an acquisition. It was okay.
Yeah.
Because I checked the credits a couple of times because the production value of it seemed better than some of the ones we've seen. And I thought maybe it was one of those Hallmark Hall of Fame ones, which is would have explained why the storytelling was trying to be more ambitious.
Right.
But yeah. It was just a regular Hallmark Channel movie.
Right.
How did you? One of the things I thought when I was watching this was, how did you find this movie? Like, how did this become a movie that you wanted to watch?
Yeah, because this wasn't new.
All the Hallmark movies.
Well, okay, honestly, because I was going through movies, because you know, I do a little research just to say,
right.
Hey, what else? What would sound interesting? And so the fact that it was about a ghost, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen a Hallmark movie on the channel about a ghost before.
Well, no, we did.
You did?
Yeah, that the one with the shoes, the Christmas one. The
wasn't a ghost.
No, that's
well,
like
what
a...
was she?
That was like a Christmas. She was an angel,
I guess.
But what is an angel if not
like
technically
a ghost? I guess it was a ghost, but it wasn't like a scary. It was Jean Smart, wasn't it?
Well, okay,
she
then
can't
let
be
me
a ghost.
Let me reframe this.
Okay.
Since it was a Hallmark romantic movie, I was like, okay. How are they going to pull off this romance with the ghost? How are they going to pull this one off?
Well, they didn't. To answer that question.
Not really, yeah.
Well, yeah, they didn't, but...
Okay. Oh, well. Edge of the Garden.
Right.
Is the name of this movie.
Now, I'm going to be honest, too. after the movie ended, I don't know how you guys felt, but I was like, did anything happen?
No.
Oh, a couple things happened.
Because I was like, when it ended, I was like, wait a minute, this is almost over?
Actually, I can tell you what happened is we all lost 2 hours of our lives.
Yeah.
That happened.
Like, oh, God. Oh, you guys, it took you guys 2 hours?
No.
Well, like, yeah, without the commercials, it's like an hour and a half. But any time I watch these movies, especially the boring ones, I have to pause because I, like, check out and I have to, like, recenter and take a note. And then I unpause.
Because I watched it on YouTube, so it was an hour 27.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, the actual movie was an hour 27, but my time invested in having to endure this was about 2 hours.
Yeah. I just watched it.
Me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like a half hour ago, I ended my adventure through the edge of the garden.
Oh, so before we dive in, any Lori Loughlin news?
Oh, wait, let's wait. Hold on.
The Lori Loughlin Minute.
Wait, am I supposed to have this? No, I don't. I have not read anything new.
I have.
Oh.
Oh, good. Thank God. I feel
responsible.
Wait,
wait, wait. Oh, I feel like we need to do it justice here. Here we go.
Yeah.
And now, with the Loughlin Report, here's Les Kirkendall Barrett.
Thanks, Jason. Actually, so, you guys, it looks like they are going after one of the daughters as well. They're investigating one of the daughters.
Is this the Olivia Jade, the one that's been in the news a lot, or is this the other one?
They're not giving out the name.
Oh.
But it's one of them. And so she's under investigation along with the parents. Now, I don't think any charges or anything have been filed yet against her, but they are investigating her.
All right.
Now, I bet Lori Loughlin at this stage of the game is kicking herself because while she is facing probably 40 years, I just read an article today that blanking on her name. Lynette.
Felicity Huffman.
Felicity Huffman is probably going to get house arrest.
Wait, Lori Loughlin, you said 40 years?
Yes.
Yeah. Because she didn't take the plea deal.
Right.
She pled not guilty.
Oh.
And so with the money laundering and all that stuff that was tacked on to the initial crime, she and her husband are facing 40 years.
40 years for that?
Yep.
How long did you go to jail for manslaughter? Let's look that up. No, I don't actually.
Well,
I guess
manslaughter is one crime. This is a list of crimes, and you could like quote unquote serve or have a 40-year sentence, but some of those years can be concurrent. So you might have gotten like 3 years for money laundering and 5 years for something else. Three of those years could overlap, so you're really still only doing 5 years.
Oh, so that's how it works?
Sometimes.
Yeah. And, okay, so do you guys know who Van Jones is?
Yeah, from CNN?
Yeah. So Van Jones was on a talk show. Like, he was a guest on a talk show today, and they were asking him about the whole thing. And so he was saying, first of all, he doesn't think that they should go to prison for all that time because it's basically a waste of prison space. And, you know, he doesn't feel that it would help. But he brought up the interesting point of the reason why they're facing so much time is, I guess, when a lawyer gives you a plea deal and you turn it down, their thought process is, okay, well, fine. If you want to play that, then we're going to let you have it.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Okay.
So, you know, I guess then they were pretty unapologetic about the whole thing, whereas Felicity Huffman basically apologized and showed remorse. That's why they're facing what they're facing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and
all right.
And I don't think they deserve 40 years either.
I don't either. I think they deserve some form of punishment, but I also do agree with Van Jones that is that the best use of our tax money to incarcerate Aunt Becky, you know, like...
Exactly.
It's not. She's not a violent criminal. She's just stupid.
Yeah. Not at all. Not at all. Some of her movies were violent. Oh, and by the way, before we get off the Lori Loughlin topic, I was so happy today. Why was I so happy today?
Because you saw a makeover montage.
No, but close.
Okay.
After looking, because basically, like I've been saying, she's been erased from the Hallmark Channel.
Okay.
And after looking and searching and looking and searching, I finally found a Lori Loughlin movie. And not only did I find a Lori Loughlin movie, it was a Lifetime Lori Loughlin movie where she played a female cop.
Okay. And are we going to watch that?
Well, this is what happened. After our experiences watching movies on YouTube, before I pick a movie, I now always go through the whole thing to make sure the whole thing is there.
Right.
The very end of this movie was cut off.
Oh, no. That's a crime.
Well, if it's like most of the movie, maybe we should watch it and then all of us come in on the do it for the podcast, and then on that podcast pitch our ideas for how the movie should end.
I mean, I'm up for that because, I mean, this is a cast, because look at who's in this cast.
Okay.
It was from 1994.
Ooh.
So it was...
Wow.
Lori Loughlin.
Young Lori Loughlin.
Doris from Fame. Remember Fame? Barry Landsberg from Fame.
No. No. Okay.
And the dad from Family Matters.
Reginald Bell Johnson? Matters.
Yes, Reginald Bell.
From Die Hard?
Die Hard, yeah. Crocodile Dundee, he's the doorman.
Yes. So.
That sounds like, Les Furs, I think.
Well, what is that group of people doing together in a movie?
I know, right? Well, it's 1994.
Well, I mean, we'll find out when we watch.
So.
That's a dinner party I want to go to.
So I've got to go through again and research it and find out the name, but that will be coming up very soon.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's good. Well, it's got to be better than Edge of the Garden. It's already better.
Right.
I know. Just the thought of the cast, I'm already more excited about watching that than I was about watching this.
So I've got to look again and find out the name and stuff. So we will be watching that in a matter of weeks.
Okay. I'm excited about that.
Edge of the Garden.
Okay, so look that up, everybody. Not Edge of the Garden. That's what we're going to watch right now.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't hurt your eyes that way.
Edge of the Garden. All right. So.
First of all, it begins in the opening credit. It says it's an Edge of the Garden production.
Yes.
So there might be more entertainment coming out of Edge of the Garden Productions.
Well, the movie actually does end in a way in which they very logically could have done the sequel, aka the movie that we should have been watching the entire time because it's less creepy.
Right.
I guess.
Right. Okay.
I think that's just done.
So we're in an empty office, right? Mm-hmm. It's an empty office. It looks like a warehouse.
Yeah.
And then we see a picture of a couple on a desk.
Well, yeah.
And then
what's going on over there?
Wait, before we even see the couple on the couple on the desk, we find out that on the computer screen, it's like a tech office clearly, and on all of the computer screens, it says the logo. It's like Connor Tech or Connor Industries or whatever. It's a tech company. But they're showing us that it's like this super cool high-tech company with the cheesiest 90s screensaver you've ever seen.
Right.
It's just like the company logo just spinning on the screens. And that's the way they choose to show us that this company is the future.
So we see this. We see like the silhouette of a woman, and she walks up to. She walks through the office. She walks up to this desk. She puts her wedding ring down. The camera pans up, and it's Sam from General Hospital.
I didn't recognize her. Okay.
I didn't recognize her either, but I don't know who she is.
See, this is more interesting for you, Les. You actually get it's exciting when you see who these people are. I have no idea.
It's like running into a friend on the street.
Right. I was like, Sam, oh my God.
You're off to a good start.
I thought you were in Port Charles.
That's the fictional town of General Hospital, in case you don't watch the show.
I didn't.
Jason's been to Port Charles.
I have. Delivered a package to Carly, not a euphemism.
Right. And Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby was there too.
Well, you've lost me.
So... So,
wedding ring. Oh, it's actually an engagement ring.
An engagement ring.
Yeah.
So Rob Estes, a.k.a. Brian, then realizes, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And he realizes that he was late. And he goes running after her, and he tries to, like, oh, I was going to leave in 5 minutes.
Yeah, he said, I was just leaving, and she said, so was I.
You guys realize what he was late for, right?
His engagement party. Yeah,
because they said, yeah, the next scene, it's his engagement party. About, like, hit us over the head with the fact that he was being a bad boyfriend.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
So we find out they're in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And he's with his buddy. And he and his friend are playing basketball, and this is where his friend fills the audience in that he missed his engagement party.
Yeah.
And so he's been dumped. He's very upset. His friend, of course, you know, gives him the business.
Yeah, he said, you can't marry Western Tech. Because he says something like, I'm going to go work for Western Tech. You can't marry Western Tech.
Exactly. And then he tells his friend that he actually needs to get his head together, and so he's going to head east to Maine.
Yay. And don't forget, his friend
is black.
A doctor. Oh, he's black.
And a doctor.
He's a doctor.
Yes.
A black doctor on a Hallmark bill.
Well, I just said he's a doctor. I didn't say...
Yeah.
It's just
a way to be racist
later
Les.
In the movie. <You're> racist.
So he goes to Maine.
And it should also be pointed out that his excuse for going to Maine is, I just bought this company out there. I'm going to go, you know, use my time to like get my head straight, but also like get this company in shape.
Yeah.
So he goes to Maine, and it really was Maine.
Oh, yeah? Oh, are you sure about that? No, I don't think it was.
Really? Because I've been to Maine several times. If it's not Maine, it's like the spitting image of Maine.
I think this was in British Columbia, I think.
Really?
I mean, Maine and Canada are not far apart, so I'd imagine the landscape looks very similar depending on where you are.
That's true.
Yeah, I've never been to Maine. Maine is one of the three states in the United States which I have not been to.
I perform in Maine. I've done a festival there like 4 years in a row. I love it there. Love it, love it, love it.
I want to go.
And if you are in Maine, go check out Port Fringe in Maine. It's a lot of fun. Anywho, so he goes.
What was your question, Jason?
Oh, I was just curious what other two states you hadn't been to.
Yeah.
Alaska and Rhode Island.
Oh.
Okay. And you're so close to Maine and Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I'm very close to
Rhode Island.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I'm very close to Maine as well. Yeah. I've never been there.
You should make time to go. It's very – I think you'd like it.
I'm not close to Alaska.
No. Have you been to Alaska, Jason?
No. No desire. All those people, they're like, I want to go on a cruise there. I'm like, that is the last place I want to go on a cruise.
I went on a cruise to Alaska.
Oh, and I'm sure it's amazing. It's just not my cup of tea.
No. And it's the kind of place that if you weren't on a cruise, I don't know how fun it would be.
I don't know. Have you guys been to Hawaii?
Yes.
No.
I was in Hawaii years ago.
My brother was born in Hawaii. I've never been.
Oh, well.
Yes, I love Hawaii. And the place
going to.
In Hawaii?
Yeah, worth going to, I said.
Yes, yes. And the funny thing is, when I went to Alaska, all the tour guides, it was a seasonal job, and when they were off season, they would all go to Hawaii off season.
That makes sense. So my roommate lived in Hawaii for a little bit, and apparently, like, all the locals there, they go to Vegas all the time because, you know, it's considered cheap to come to the mainland because everything is less expensive here. So they'll come and they'll go to Vegas because it's really cheap there, and they get a weekend of, like, gambling and drinking in, and they call it the Eighth Island.
Oh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think eight. I'm losing track of how many islands are in Hawaii, but however many there are, plus one.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe I'll look that up.
So, meanwhile, Brian shows up at the tech company, which is his company now.
Yes.
And he walks in, and actually, it looked pretty fun in there.
Well, yeah, it's like a tech office, how a tech office normally is.
Right.
It's a bunch of millennials slacking off.
Playing games, playing
like foosball.
Like Flip Cup.
Yeah.
Flip Cup. Were they playing Flip Cup?
I saw Red Cups.
Okay.
Yeah, either Flip Cup or beer pong, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing at work.
You create a creative environment. People take little breaks, right. But when they are working, they're more productive.
This is like back in the day. I remember going to some tech office. It was like maybe 2,000 people are playing foosball and balls are bouncing around. No one's doing a thing. I don't think that company's around anymore.
Well, Brian shows up in a suit, and he's very uptight. And he goes into his office, and there's a very angry woman packing up her stuff. And we find out she's angry because she was the manager who has just been demoted so he could come in and take over.
Yes.
He's pushing her out because for him, it's his family's business. So he has a priority.
Yeah. Even though, I didn't know if you guys caught this, but this was the one and only time that he mentioned that it was a family business.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that. No.
Yeah, I said it.
But I think, I don't know if they needed to keep saying that over and over again, because the business was literally named after his family.
Right.
What was the name of the business? It was very...
Connor
Industries or Connor Tech or Connor Do We Really Care? Because this movie is boring.
Oh, boy. He looked a little like Peter Weller, like from the 80s.
Who, Rob Estes?
Yeah, I thought so. He had a Peter Weller quality to him.
I mean, even though the movie was boring, Rob Estes is hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely an the eye candy part is what kept me going.
That's good.
So, so he starts chatting with the demoted woman. She's giving him attitude.
The demoted woman.
She's totally given him attitude, and then he tells her, "Listen, I'm just here to get the company back on its feet, and then I'm giving the company back to you. I have no desire to stick around." So then he finds a realtor, and he's looking for a condo. But the realtor is like this old guy.
Right, his name is Keenan O'Dwyer. That was his name.
Yeah.
Did not catch that.
Keenan O'Dwyer.
You think he's Irish?
Keenan O'Dwyer! Let me show you the leprechauns. Yep.
And so Keenan, he's looking for a condo, but Keenan takes him out into the woods.
Like the super rapey woods. Not even like just right outside the city. Like they were driving a while, and it's pointed out that they're driving a while, and they're going to this like middle of nowhere house when the dude wanted to live in the city in a condo.
In a condo, yeah. But yeah, right. I was like, you can still live in a condo. You don't have to listen to Keenan O'Dwyer. No, no condo for you. Let's go. Let's keep driving and driving and driving.
And
someone who wanted a condo, this was the complete opposite.
Right. And it reminded me a lot of – I just saw Pet Sematary this past week, and it reminded me of, like, the Pet Sematary where these people, like, live in this house, like, deep in the woods from the city. Yeah. And it did not go well.
Yeah, and I actually think that just that little detail of him saying that he wanted to live in and buy a condo was so unnecessary and actually probably slowed the first part of the movie down. Because if they had just gone into it, him saying, like, oh, yeah, I want, like, a nice house in the countryside because I don't get to experience that normally, like, that would have – the rest of the premise of the movie would have still worked.
Right.
Yeah, it made no difference. In fact, it didn't even make any sense, really. Like I said, you want a condo, get a condo. Yeah. You don't have to listen to this real estate agent. He's not kidnapping you.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of was.
I guess, yeah, he was.
I'm coming up in the rapey woods.
Let's go to the woods now. I don't know why my accent's all over the place. Okay, here we go.
So he takes him to this house, and the house did actually look kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that. This place looks kind of cool.
Yeah. I did feel like that before I even because I didn't remember what the plot of the movie was, and before I knew there were ghosts and things like that, as he's walking around the house and I'm just looking, I'm like, somebody died in this house. We're going to find out somebody died in this house.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he walks in there. It's very clean. Everything's clean. There's even, like, pictures and vases that are clean. I guess it's reasonable that a real estate agent cleaned the place, perhaps. Yeah, but
stage the house.
But I wrote a note because there were sheets on the furniture, and I wrote, when there's sheets on the furniture, you know there's a ghost.
Why is that?
Yeah. Because on Halloween, people put a sheet on themselves, and they're a ghost.
But they're not furniture.
True, yeah.
And plus, I don't know about you guys, but like a house that old, wouldn't you think the furniture would be kind of gross?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a very clean, put-together house.
I thought the kitchen was super modern-looking for a house that was supposed to be so old and untouched.
Right. Yeah, and it's been empty for 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then we find out the house was owned by the Kilgores. And
I'm Kilgore.
We find out, because he's looking around the house, and then we see, like, fresh flowers.
Kilgore. Yeah, fresh flowers.
We see fresh flowers in the house. But then you're thinking, oh, well, he staged the house, and so that's what they do when they stage a house.
Staging.
So he shows him the price of the house, and he's like, whoa, because it's cheap. And Keenan is like, well, this isn't California. And then they meet the owner of the house, and
Mr. Kilgore. Yeah.
Mr. Kilgore, and he's like, this is the price of the house, not a penny more.
Yeah, he's grumpy. He's grumpy.
He was being super shady about unloading the place, too. Like, you're like, trying to sell this?
As is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you have to hire a house inspector to get in there and make sure this house is not going to crash to the earth. But the guy doesn't do that.
Don't most states require you by law to do that? Or most mortgage lenders require you to do that before they'll even lend you the money anyway?
Oh, it didn't seem like it was happening here.
No.
Unless he just bought it outright, which he may have.
Just on your own, you better hire a house inspector.
To be fair to the movie, it is possible that they decided that they didn't need to put a plot point of house inspector comes.
I'm just giving advice out for people. In case people are living their lives based on Edge of the Garden, don't.
Oh, I hope that somebody is somewhere. Please tell us if you do. Let us know on Instagram at Lifetime of Hallmark Podcast.
Yeah. I'll give you my phone number. You can call me if you're living your life based on Edge of the Garden. No, that's
I'm going to write fanfic for Edge of the Garden where I do the title search scene.
Oh, that's it, yeah. That's my fantasy, yeah. They hire the health inspector.
Just like Marvel, I'm going to create a whole Edge of Garden cinematic universe.
I think that's great. Yeah, you're adding characters. You got the inspector. Right. And the
yeah. But just character. Imagine all the romantic movies you could have as offshoots of this movie. Like, we could, in like 20 years from now, we can do a reboot where we focus on all of the employees at the tech company.
Right. Oh. The demoted woman.
No, I've met like the younger ones who will be like older at that point.
Yeah, well.
So now that he has the house, he goes back there at night and he's taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he sees like a light flash in the house. And
what does he see?
He sees like a light. And so then he, of course, does the dumb horror movie thing of, what do you do when you see a light and something creepy is going on in the house? Do you call the cops or run? No, you go in there.
Yeah.
So he goes up to the bedroom, like because he's like, you know, who's here with his poker? And he goes up to the bedroom and there's like yellow.
Like a fireplace poker, to be clear.
Yeah.
Who's here? He puts on a Grover voice.
Who's here? Rob Best, he just whips
her. Who's here? Who's flicking the lights on?
So then it cuts to the next day, right? And he's in the office, and now everybody's wearing a suit in the office, and it doesn't look so fun anymore. And who was it? Someone says creativity doesn't punch a time clock. Oh, I think it was the demoted woman.
Yeah.
So then he calls back to talk to his friend, and his friend is like, you know, I saw Julie. She's asking about you. Julie wants an update. What do I tell her? And so then who was he talking to when they were talking about fixing up the house and someone was saying it's avoidance therapy? Someone told him that.
That's the demoted woman.
Okay.
She tells him that.
Because meanwhile,
he's got
chummy
his
now.
Doctor friend. He's got his doctor friend on speakerphone. I don't think he's even aware he's on speakerphone. And he's saying rude things about the demoted woman.
He's like, who's that?
Who's it?
I couldn't catch that. That's actually funny. You just hear in the background go, I can hear you.
Yeah. You're on speakerphone. He didn't tell you.
So he's moving into the house, right?
Yeah.
And so he's in the house, and then all of a sudden, he hears talking in the house, but nobody's there. Like, the room's empty. And so then, and the window closes on its own.
Ooh.
So then...
Did we get to the part with the radio yet?
Yeah.
That's happening right now.
The part right now.
Okay. Right now. He hears JFK on the radio.
Yeah.
It's which like that wouldn't make me suspicious. That it could be a broadcast from something.
Wasn't it set up that it was like in part of a newscast from 1960? Yeah.
Like
basically, he's listening to music on like a regular traditional radio, and all of a sudden the music cuts out, and in comes this news broadcast from 1960. And this movie came out like 2011, so you know, 50 years later. This newscast comes on and then goes away. And, like, Rob has this WTF look on his face. Like, what's going on here?
Right.
Did you see what Rob was or what Brian was holding when this happened?
What?
And this is the 5-year-old in me found this very amusing. Caulk.
Oh. Caulk.
He was caulking the door.
Oh.
Rob Estes was holding... his cock.
Oh, he's holding his cock.
Yes,
oh.
His cock.
Yes.
I just wasn't thinking on that level.
So then he's cleaning pipes.
Yes, he is.
Was he using cock? Was he using his cock
you
while
know,
he was cleaning
ironically,
the pipe?
If you stick cock into a pipe, it fills it.
I have to do the math here. Cock in a pipe. Oh, okay, I got it.
Right.
It's late on the East Coast. It's 9:55.
So then he finds a locket.
Yeah.
He finds, like, in the pipe, he finds a locket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the locket says, true love. And then we see someone walking outside, and it's a woman, and he runs outside. He startles the woman, and she's like, who are you? And he's like, oh, I
who dis?
Exactly, who dis?
Who dis?
And then he's like, I just bought the place. And the woman's like, no, you didn't buy this place. This is my place. And...
See, you should have done a title search.
This is my garden. And then he takes out the locket, and she was like, oh, I was looking for that. But then she goes to grab the locket, and her hand goes through the locket. So she's a ghost. And so she runs into the house. Like, they're both scared. She runs into the house. He runs into the house. She runs into the house, and the house is, like, furnished like it's in the 60s. And her husband's there, and her husband is like, did you find the locket? And she's like, I think I just saw a ghost. And then Brian runs into his house, and his house is empty, right?
Right.
So then the husband goes outside with a gun, which this was the first controversial thing I thought for the Hallmark Channel. I've never seen a gun on the Hallmark Channel.
That's true. Oh, I don't think I have either.
Yeah, even in, like, the murder movies or whatever, like, we always sort of hear about the murder. We never see it.
And so he has a gun, and he's going to shoot him. Like, and I was like, oh, my gosh.
Are you sure he wasn't just holding his caulk gun?
His caulk? Look, everyone, we have to work with what we have here to get through this movie.
So then he goes back in the house, and they start arguing. The wife and the husband start arguing, which is another thing I think is controversial for a Hallmark movie. Like, a husband and wife actually, like, fighting.
Well, I thought it was controversial at the beginning of the movie, just the not just the ending of the engagement, but doing it in such a dramatic way with, like, the ring is taken off. Like, we don't see that, really.
Right. Nope, no. Never
even that level of discord.
This is a departure.
And so they're fighting, and then they're fighting in the 60s, but Rob could hear them fighting in the empty house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the next day, this kind of bugged me, because the next day, Rob is like, oh, well, like, nothing happened. It's like, you just had a full-on conversation with a ghost. Mm-hmm. And you're just acting like, whatever.
So, like, right from the moment, or the moment after the moment with the locket, I was no longer on board with watching this movie beyond the fact that it was boring, because the logic of the premise didn't make sense. Like, if she can't put her she can't touch the locket, her hand goes right through it, yet literally the next beat is the husband holding a physical gun, closing the physical door of the house. Like, what are the rules of this movie in this universe that allow them to physically hold some things but not others?
Right.
Exactly. Well, I guess maybe that's because the locket was coming from 2010. Like, he was bringing the locket back to her, but the gun existed in their actual time.
But okay, so the only way that they could transport things through time was through that little tin that they left in the fireplace, and if not, why didn't you just put the locket in there? Movie over.
Well, that could work, yeah.
I guess. It was like that movie. Did you ever see that movie, the Sandra Bullock movie, The Lake House?
I didn't see it, but I knew that was the premise, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's the same, same thing. I've never seen that, but yeah.
But they put it in the mailbox.
I'm saying if the movie ended now, like right now,
I'd be happy.
Then that idea could work. That if he's bringing stuff back from 2010, then she can't handle it.
Like, if the movie ended at this point in my watching the movie, I would have given it one more star, because that would mean that I wouldn't have to watch the next hour and a half of this movie.
This is where I wrote, what the hell is this movie? That's what I wrote. That's what I was hoping. I was like, I'm going with the premise that this movie ends here.
So then the next scene, she's like out in her garden. She's gardening. Frank the handyman shows up.
Uh-oh.
And then the husband is like just an ass. Frank like brings this bench. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but I wrote a note. Frank and the woman, Nora, they're very whispery.
Yeah.
They were very, like, their voices were very low.
We find out why later on.
Well, yeah.
Did you, when Frank first appeared on screen, did you guys think that he might be from present day? Because I wasn't sure at first, just by, like, wardrobe.
Right.
No.
But I didn't think he was from present day, though.
Oh, I just saw, like, he was... Well, first of all, I initially thought the movie was set in 1940, not 1960, and I was like, that flannel shirt, like, what he's wearing doesn't look right. And it was like, oh, wait, no, I'm off by a few years here.
So then Frank brought this bench. I guess he made a bench for her, for Nora, the woman.
Right.
And so the husband goes to Frank, and he's like, you weren't prowling around last night, were ya?
Why would I be doing that? What?
And so then...
It was at that point that I wrote down, the ghost husband is a dick.
Right.
Oh, he was a ghost husband, and he wasn't a ghost husband.
Well, what is he then? If he's not a ghost husband, what is he?
Wait, which one? Her husband.
Yeah, yeah. Her husband.
Well, no, he's not a ghost in 1960. We're watching it in 1960, right?
Yeah.
Well, we're watching it in both.
Oh.
There are moments in the movie that take place in the past. I mean, they're both happening simultaneously, we find out.
Oh, I guess so. All right.
Angry Ginger, her husband. Yes.
This reminds me of that movie with Bill Cosby, Ghost Dad.
Kind of.
Bill Cosby's a ghost dad.
Now, if she were to hold out her hand for the Quaaludes, would she be able to touch them?
Oh.
Is that inappropriate?
Ouch! Damn, and I set that up. Now I'm going to get letters.
Yeah.
I'm going to get Twitter followers out of that. Just out of anger, too. Yes.
Okay, so then they take the bench, and then the husband then actually makes her carry the bench.
Well, damn straight. He's got to go to work.
I didn't take it as he made her do that. I took it as, like, she asked him to help, and, like, he helped get it out of the truck. And then she was like, oh, yeah, let's move it. It's right here. It's not that big. Like, I didn't take that as he was a dick in many ways to her. But that moment, I didn't take it as him being a dick. I thought it was like, he's got to go.
Yeah. Okay. Because then his dickishness, he's, like, the ultimate dick later in the movie.
You dick.
He's such a cock.
So... she pours coffee, and Brian is pouring coffee at the same time.
Oh, yeah. I like that, because I like coffee. But then when Brian's pouring it, he overflows the cup. His cup runneth over.
Right.
And his concerns,
then,
yeah.
Then he asks the demoted woman, you know, what's the story about the house? And then she says New England is haunted. And I remember when I was in Maine, there were, like, cemeteries everywhere.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Everywhere. I mean, I remember going to a cemetery and having a ghosty experience in a cemetery there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
I mean, the whole Northeast, if you figure that, like, that's where everyone settled when they came over here, it makes sense that there were just physically more people buried there.
Yeah. The cemeteries are huge. Yeah, I went to the cemetery with our friend Nicole. Kurt knows Nicole.
Right. Yeah.
And so we were taking pictures, and when we looked back at the pictures on the iPad, we saw, like, a shadow of a little girl in one of the pictures.
Hmm. Oh, could you Instagram that on our Instagram?
I gotta find it, but when I find it, I will for sure, because I have it. And Nicole's, like, my witness.
Do you think that from beyond the grave, the dead person in your photo is like, tag me?
Tag me?
Yeah.
Tag me.
Take the picture. You need pictures for your Instagram.
My Insta handle is dead but not forgotten.
Whatever you do, don't watch Edge of the Garden. Listen to me, please.
Why didn't I listen?
So then Rob gets... So Brian, Rob, Estes, gets home.
Estes.
And there's, like, fresh flowers in his house.
That's nice.
And then he sees Nora sitting on the bench, and she's like, listen, my husband's going to be pissed. You better go. And then they introduce themselves, and... Find out what year they're in.
He said, what year is it? It's every year. It's the same year for me that is for you. No.
And then he's like, it's 50 years later, and shows her his driver's license. And then she starts describing the garden and saying how she sees flowers, and there's flowers everywhere. And then she picks up a flower, and the flower like just starts blooming in her hands.
Again, but, picking up physical items from another part of another dimension. Like,
yeah, okay.
But then she hands him the flower and disintegrates.
Oh. Yep. Why doesn't he try to get into... He's in 1960. Why don't they team up to go prevent the Kennedy assassination? I know it's happened like a more than once in other things, but it would be more interesting than what's happening in this movie.
But then he couldn't tell her about the future.
Why not? This isn't somewhere in time.
Don't you watch Doctor Who?
He does, though. He does tell her about the future. The medicine.
That's a Christopher Reeve movie where if like he reveals anything about like where he's from, he'll go back in time, and so he does.
And that's look not, what happened.
That's not what's going on here.
Look what happened in that movie.
Whatever it was more than is happening in this one.
Oh. This movie's like a combination of Ghost Dad and Somewhere in Time. You see, I can't tell you about what's happening in the future because you really don't want to know. Really, Bill? Why? What happens to you in the future? I said I'm not going to tell you.
Do you think
just
that
pretend it's 1960?
Do you think that Bill Cosby's version of this universe in this movie? He's not looking for a locket. He's looking for a Jell-O pudding pop.
Right. It's like Bill, we're not going to tell you about your future. Not so good.
I'm sure he knows he was well, there.
Okay.
The next scene, I just have to say, just when you thought the movie was, you know, picking up some steam, we get a shot of a spider, and then the spider's on a web, and then we see a bee. And, you know, a substantial amount of time, we see this, you know, it's fascinating. It really keeps the movie just rocking and rolling.
I did not even notice the spider or the bee.
No. Oh, it happened.
And I love the fact, though, that she's just acting like, oh, you know, I just talked to some guy from the future. Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah, she's out with the handyman again.
Frank.
The husband's not happy.
No, he does not like Frank.
He does look like a ghost a little bit, this husband guy.
The mean ginger husband?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a ghoulish ginger. No offense to the actor.
Or gingers.
Or ghouls.
Or husbands.
Didn't ghoulish ginger just play Coachella?
Oh, man. Yeah.
So, the husband...
Oh, she has a headache.
She's very sick.
Yeah.
And the husband is being just a douche to Frank.
You dick.
Who's done nothing wrong, by the way. Frank, who's done nothing but been helpful. Mm-hmm.
No, he just looks healthier.
Right. So then we find out that she's bored, that Nora's very bored, and she's lonely. And she asks the husband if she could get a job at the dress shop. And he gets very upset.
Like, you're saying I can't support us?
And then he's feeling threatened by Frank because he's like, when Frank is done with this garden, you need to get rid of him.
Yeah, he says, I don't like the way he looks at you.
Right.
And that whole, like, I get why he, you know, was jealous or insecure about Frank or whatever. That, like, you know, that makes sense. But what didn't make sense is this is a guy that he seemingly is making good money, that he can afford to pay this handyman to come there. Like, if you don't like him, fire him now. Why are you waiting till he finishes the job? Get rid of him and get a new person in there to do the job.
Right.
It's hard to find a contractor. Maybe. I guess he's a handyman, though, right?
Yeah.
No.
So then she's pissed off. She goes in the living room. She sits down. She writes a letter to Brian that she's pissed off. She puts it in a tin and she hides it in a house.
In the fireplace, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess nobody's going to use the fireplace for
50 years.
Yeah.
And then Brian finds the note.
Immediately, he decides, I think I'll clean the fireplace, which apparently hasn't been cleaned in 50 years.
And the tin isn't even, like, black on the outside. Like, somebody had, I don't know, lit a fire in 50 years in the fireplace.
No. And the paper looks like it's perfectly white. Mm-hmm. it looks like it's brand new paper.
So we find out, because there was no Oprah or, you know, anything like that back then. So she was, like, bearing her soul. She hates her marriage.
Yeah.
She married him for all the wrong reasons.
Oprah was alive.
He's slightly older. He's an attorney. And
what
when
is he?
She married him, he was one way, but then he changed.
He's an attorney.
Oh, an attorney. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He became moody. He became possessive.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
That's right. I wrote that too. Moody.
Possessive.
Moody. Possessive. Moody.
Possessive.
Possessive.
By Calvin Klein.
So then so I
your
wrote,
husband
like,
can smell moody and possessive.
Moody.
All right.
So I wrote, like, back possessive. The office. The workers are looking miserable.
A very diverse group of workers, I noticed. I think there were even some Indian. Well, yeah.
Yes.
Black people were in there.
Asian
a lot of women.
Lady.
Yeah, it was.
Especially yeah, so for was Maine, great. Which is not very diverse.
No.
It's Maine, but again, it's a young tech company.
Right.
Yeah, they may have you know come in from other areas.
Right.
Jesse Jackson was there. It was the Rainbow Coalition. I walked out of an elevator. And I walked into Jesse Jackson, like he was like waiting for the elevator, and I was like kind of in shock, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Jackson," and he's like, "Hey, brother."
Oh, he called you brother?
Yeah, he called me brother. He's, hey, what's up, brother? Yeah.
This is a true story. I once drug dialed the Reverend Al Sharpton.
Oh no! What happened?
What'd you say?
Well, first of all, this is for context for you, Les, that you'll appreciate. I was at Fiesta Cantina, and it was like a day drunk dial, too. A friend of mine who hosts a talk radio show here in Los Angeles, like, happened to have Jesse's or Al Sharpton's number and happened to casually mention it when we were a couple drinks in. I'm like, give me your phone. And so we dialed him. He answered. We just hung up. But still,
that's terrible. I did that to somebody. I'm embarrassed though.
Was it right. Which?
It was John Stewart. I called John Stewart and hung up on him.
What?
It's a long time ago. I'm gonna get sued. No, I never did that. I'm just kidding.
Well, Al Sharpton.
Never did it. Don't want any lawsuits. So Reverend Al, so he did answer the phone though?
He did, yeah, it was his personal cell phone. But it was like 4 PM.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it wasn't like unusual.
As I said, it was daytime. It was sunlight out.
The Esta Cantina at 4 PM gets kind of raucous.
Well, it's happy hour. That's when it begins.
Mm-hmm. 2 for 1.
That's when Al Sharpton gets all those 4 PM calls.
Oh, it's 2 for 1.
He's like, why do I always hear mariachi music in the background when people drunk dial me?
Hold on, it's 4 o'clock. I start getting these calls.
Oh, so Brian runs into Keegan.
Who?
To Keegan, the
realtor.
Oh yeah, that guy.
And then
he looks like a drunk.
So then, they were ran into each other in a bar.
Yeah, they were in a bar.
They were in a bar.
Instead of no filter.
And Keegan's one of those guys that wears a fisherman hat all the time.
What about how he got into real estate?
I know, right?
I don't know.
Because he realized he could sell people on something that they totally didn't want and realize there's money in it.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Yeah.
He sold a house that's been on the market for 30 years.
Yeah.
This guy's a genius.
And he's asking Keegan questions, but Keegan's being very cagey about it. And he's like, I saw a woman, and Keegan starts to like clam up.
Yeah.
and
yeah, he looks guilty, and then he like and then he like backtracks. He's like, oh, that woman? I mean, oh no, there's no woman.
And then he says, you know, some things need to stay dead and buried. So we then realize something went down at the cottage. Mm-hmm. So then Brian goes home to his tin, and he has a letter waiting for him. And we find out that her husband made them move to the country because he likes the quiet. And she is not feeling well, and she asks, can loneliness be fatal? So then the doctor shows up, and the doctor finds a rash, and the doctor's like, uh-oh. And the husband's like, will you just hurry up? Like, the husband's mean to the doctor. And he's like, hurry up, I gotta go to work. But Frank is still hanging out. And
did you catch the name of the ghost doctor, by the way?
Oh, no. What was his name?
Dr. Bowers.
Oh, I didn't see that. Wow.
Jason, a relative? A long-lost relative. Or,
Is he maybe really long-lost, though, if it's a parallel universe?
Maybe that was you. Like, you're going to become a doctor years from now and then go back in time.
Go back to the 60s.
Oh, wait, so I have to become a doctor and then go back in time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Unless you want to go back in time.
Just in terms of like medical school, it's probably a lot cheaper and a lot easier if I do it back then.
Yeah.
I could take today money and go back in time, and it's like $1,000, and I go through med school and I'm a doctor like that.
Well, also, yeah, imagine the expenses. Yeah, you have to pay for medical school. Oh, you could avoid – no. You could avoid your student loans by going back in time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That would void those. Then
you could bring a bunch of medicine from now, though, and be like a cutting-edge doctor.
Oh, yeah.
You know? No, you should go now. And then go back in time. That's what I'm saying.
Let's pause this podcast for 1 second.
No. So then you avoid all the student loans. You have the student loans, but they're null and void because you went back in time.
Yeah.
And you go back with all this brand new medicine, whatever's out there, mm-hmm. and you'll be a hero to all.
Okay, done.
Okay, good.
I accept the challenge.
We probably spent too much time on this.
I will time travel for the show.
Right, and then podcast. We could podcast.
Yes, you could create the first podcast in 1960.
Yes,
right.
It's called The Radio.
You can invent the radio.
And then people in 1960 will tell me the radio has already existed for quite some time now.
Right. Oh, so the husband is such a dick that he tells the doctor, oh, she's faking. Like, such a dick.
What I thought was weird about that moment was – up until this point, when she was complaining about the headaches, the husband was trying to get her to see the doctor, and she's like, no, it's fine, it's fine.
Right.
She was the one poo-pooing it, but now that the doctor's there, the husband's the one poo-pooing it? That doesn't make any sense. Much like everything else in this movie.
Wow.
And the doctor makes a face, so you know something's bad.
Yeah, you don't want to see a doctor making a face. You're like, oh, what's that?
He totally made a face.
Whoa, hey, doctor, what's he making a face?
You don't want to look at your doctor and say, doctor, am I going to die? And the doctor makes that face of, well.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want some scrunched up look. Like, hey, that's not reassuring.
But, okay, Nora does something very smart, though.
She does?
She writes down all of her symptoms and puts it in the tin, and then Brian gets the tin, then he goes to his friend, the doctor, and tells the friend what's going down, and we find out that she has Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. How about that? And boy. So then... then the doctor in the present writes to, oh, he asks his friend, what kind of medications are good for Lyme's disease, but it's got to be only stuff that you can get in the 60s.
Yeah, 1960. Up to, you know, and probably up to a certain date in 1960. Yeah. You can't have something that came out at the end of the year if it were the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
So it was basically like she went to WebMD because he gives her the list.
Oh, they have got their own WebMD. They had something called MedNet. MedNet. Where they go and they look up information about Lyme disease, which almost looked like it looked like an email thing. Like an email browser. MedNet.
So then he sends the list back, and meanwhile, Brian gets a phone call from Julie. And
Julie.
She's missing the sound of his voice.
Yeah.
But she's still pissed.
She doesn't know what she wants. She's like, I don't know what I want. I don't know why I called.
She was obnoxious.
I don't know. I don't know what I want. I don't know. I
felt bad for her at the beginning of the movie because she was neglected. But the more we got to know her and have her in the movie, the more I hated her.
Imagine Julie as a real person watching this movie. Do you think she'd like it? I don't think she would.
Who, Julie? You mean Samantha Morgan?
I mean, if Julie was a real human being and she watched this movie, I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't think she would.
I think you're right.
No, I think she wouldn't like it. She's too busy being Sam on General Hospital, and right now, Sam on General Hospital is trapped in a cult.
Oh.
So she wouldn't be able to watch it.
Oh, okay.
Tell us about that.
Sam is in a cult. She's been through a lot. Because she found out that the man that she was married to was actually his twin, and he lost his memories because his memories are all on a flash drive.
Wait, what? And did they lose the flash drive?
No, they just found the flash drive.
Okay, so all his memories are now retained.
Upload your memories to Dropbox, bitch.
Well, you don't want them in the cloud.
If you have it on a Dropbox, it's in the cloud, but also stored locally on your hard drive. You get both.
I don't want my memories to be hacked. But the guy with the jump drive, okay.
She found it. He's his twin brother. But he was in an accident, so he had to get facial reconstructive surgery. So that's why they don't look alike.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense.
Well, you know, it's Port Charles.
Basically absurd.
Wow. Well, they keep it interesting.
Oh!
So okay, what happened?
Nora is then, she gets like really sick. Like really sick.
Mm.
But the husband, like, he goes on a trip and leaves her there by herself. Sick. In bed. But then Frank shows up and he makes her some soup.
And some tea. And offers to make her a cheese sandwich.
And he's like, you know, my mother was a nurse. And she's like, well, too bad your mother wasn't a chef.
Oh, that's appreciative.
So then she gets Frank to give her a ride, right?
So they're talking, and she tells
Frank, I met my husband at a legal conference in Cincinnati, and I said, oh my God, I met Kurt Fitzpatrick in Cincinnati.
That's where we met.
I didn't think about that. That's right.
Because I met you and Catherine and Mark and Sadie all at the same time, other performer friends of ours.
Oh, no, you met me before that.
Really?
Yeah, you met me in 2005.
Oh, but in Cincinnati, though.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
I think Catherine was there, though.
Because I didn't meet Catherine. No, I didn't meet Catherine until 2009. In Fresno, I met her.
Because I met Catherine in Cincinnati as well.
Okay.
The wonderful world of performing.
Yes. What's this next? Yeah, they met at a conference in Cincinnati.
Right. So Brian goes home, and there's no note in the tin box, and so he's worried. Then the husband finds the medicine that she needed that is working, but the husband thinks that because he found medicine, that means she's cheating.
Well, clearly.
Also, the scene when she's at the doctor and she gives him the medicine that she says she got, like, she got the list from a friend, and the doctor's like, well, you know, this might work or whatever. He's saying some of these are, like, brand new medications or whatever, or, you know, like, brand new to market. One of the things on the list was literally vitamin C. I don't know why I found that. I just thought that was so funny. He's like, oh, I don't know about this stuff. This is, you know, and it was like vitamin C.
Very edgy.
Was that new in 1960? Maybe. I don't know.
Very edgy. So then, but yes, but the husband's like, how did she get this medicine? Mm-hmm. We find out. Oh, so then we go back to Brian. Brian is like casually dressed at work. He's wearing jeans. He has flowers on his desk. Sales are up. It's like a whole new him.
Yeah.
But Brian is still worried because he has no note in his tin. So he walks. So he's walking in the room, and then flowers just spontaneously start growing. And then he goes to the garden, and Nora is there. She's feeling much better. She's asking, how can I repay you? And he's like, tell me about the locket. And we find out she's had the locket for generations, and the locket's powers is the power of the locket is that it leads you to true love. Uh-huh. So her grandmother wore the locket when she – what was it? The grandmother wore the locket when she met her grandfather.
Yeah,
it
was a whole story.
Wore the locket when she met her dad, da-da-da-da-da. And she gave it to her daughter.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he tells her about Julie, how it didn't work out. He tells Nora, you need to leave him. And she's like, but I can't. I'm married.
He laughs at her face.
She's like,
excuse
oh,
me.
You.
She's like, don't you respect the
right
sanctity of marriage? He's like, yeah.
Then the garden, like, starts growing. She's telling me about the garden. The garden starts growing, but then she disappears, and the garden is gone. But the next day, Brian plants a garden. And then he has one of his employees, Dylan, bring a bunch of phone books. Like, actual
young Dylan.
Phone.
Which is like an old-timey Google.
Right.
And this young man was previously in the office looking young and surly.
Yes.
Looking an angry, bitter millennial.
Yes.
And now he shows up with these phone books, and he's Brian's buddy. Except right. He doesn't want to have lunch with him.
No. He's like, Brian, let's not get crazy.
Yeah. Hey, keep coming out, making some sandwiches. No, I have to go do something.
So Brian's going through the phone books, and he finds Tom, Nora's husband. And so he calls him. And so then Tom meets him at the wharf. Tom is really old. He's like, I need to talk to you about Nora. Tom is like, what do you mean? She died years ago.
She's dead.
Something just dawned on me. Why did he need to look up Tom's number in a phone book? They even like comment on the fact that like, oh, no one really uses these things anymore. Like, if Tom is still alive and he was looking up a current number, which Tom is currently using in the present day, why didn't he need a phone book to do that?
Yeah, that was being kind of ageist, don't you think?
Well, yeah. When I watched the movie, it didn't dawn on me because I was like, oh, he's trying to find this guy from a long time ago, and that's the way they would have looked him up. But I'm like, but he's in present day. He's looking for him in present day. So he did, that's they didn't actually need to do that.
Yeah, it really doesn't make any sense.
No.
So he starts asking Tom questions about his dead wife. Tom gets pissed off.
Yeah.
I can't blame Tom for getting pissed off. Some stranger's asking me about his dead wife.
She died!
I can't blame Tom, except for the fact that he agreed to meet up. Like, if some rando calls and says, hey, I've got news for you or something I want to tell you, and you're like, all right, I'll come meet you, then, you know, part of that lies on you.
Right.
You're paying for this lunch, right?
But then we find out his wife died in an accident.
Well, he said, hey, look, accidents happen all the time. Well, yeah, no, he says, Ryan, right? He says, I think there's a way I could bring her back. What? How you do that?
Right.
Really just cuts him right off.
So then we find out there are a lot of rumors about how she died. And then he gathers together his ethnically diverse group of employees. And they all discuss the various rumors.
Yes, everybody just starts discussing. There's an Asian woman and young Dylan, who used to be surly and now is helpful. Right. Yes, today's youth is taking a turn.
That's because he touched a phone book.
Right.
Yep. They're not going to sit in their house and listen to their Adriana Grande record anymore. They are going to come to work and help their Generation X.
Did you say Adriana manager. Grande?
He did. I thought that was funny.
Adriana Grande records will not be listened to. There is work to be done, millennials.
What's a record?
Adriana Grande.
What's a record?
I still love that you called her Adriana Grande.
That's right. There will be none of that.
Oh, so then Julie.
No Kesha? All right, go ahead.
Julie, Kesha?
No Kesha records? No records
dollar
at all.
Sign, huh?
There's work to be done in this computer office.
Oh, dear. But Julie shows up out of nowhere.
Right.
And she wants to talk. She just happened to be in Maine. Well, no, she went to a wedding in New York and just happened to end up in Maine 6 hours away from New York.
Yeah. And then first thing she says to him is like, oh, if you want to come over, I'm staying at a B&B. If you want to come over, we can talk. Like
a B&B?
Yeah, like
of course,
a bed
I
and
just
breakfast,
said Adriana Grande, but well, what's a B&B?
A bed and breakfast.
Bed and breakfast.
Oh, I thought you meant like an Airbnb.
No, but I just thought it was like – She was basically inviting him over for a booty call in a Hallmark movie.
Ooh.
Sex with the ex.
Really? I wasn't sure about that. Because she's like, I could see your place. I think I like Julie. Because she doesn't make any sense. So it's that way she kind of fits in the
then
movie.
Then you should love this movie.
I like her because I think she kind of works in the movie. She doesn't know what's going on. I don't know. She makes sense to me. To me.
She's all yours.
That's funny to you.
Yeah, because she's just really confused, doesn't know where she's going.
Oh, so we're back in the 60s, and the husband, and she's like serving dinner, and the husband's like, this fork is dirty.
Yeah.
And then there's a knock at the door. It's Frank. Frank is like, where is my money? I need a check. I need to finish this garden. I need a check to cover the materials. And Tom is mad, and he's like, you gave my wife a medical list. You drove my wife to the doctor. Like, that's so evil. Gee.
How dare you be concerned about my wife's well-being was basically the gist of it.
He punches him in the face.
Which I think is another for a Hallmark movie. This is very controversial.
Yeah.
Violence.
Well, they've come a long way because this movie does not even resemble a Hallmark movie, and yet it says it is.
And then And so then she breaks it up. She's like, your dinner's getting cold. And then meanwhile, they are at Julie and Brian are at Brian's house. And she's like, oh, you have fresh flowers. And then moves them. It's like, so you're going to come into someone's house and just move their
flowers. Yeah, I thought that was rude.
It was very rude. Oh, so Julie and Tom are talking, right?
Yes.
And Tom is like, you know, we want different things. You want parties and openings. You want to go to openings and parties. And I wrote down, well, what's the problem? But he wants quiet.
Yes.
And then he sees Nora on the bench. She's crying. He then tells her, I met your husband, and you need to leave. And then she asks him, am I going to die? And then he says something, and he's like, I read it on the internet. And she's like, what's the internet?
I did like that moment. That was funny.
Yeah, he started explaining to her what the internet was. Well, this man named Al Gore had started this thing.
So he's like, your house, there's going to be a fire. I think we met so that I can warn you. And he's like, you need to go. And she's like, but he's my husband. And he's basically like, Brian's like, get your ass in there and pack and leave.
Also, we didn't mention the fact that so he's out there talking to Nora because, like, while the ex-fiance is in his house, like, roaming around, he, like, sneaks out of his own home to go talk to a ghost.
Yes. And well, I love the fact this part made me like Julie because she was going through his stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you love to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's creeping around, snooping around. You respect that.
Yeah, she's going through her stuff. She's finding out what was going on.
Yeah.
So Nora goes in the house. She starts fighting for her husband. She starts fighting with her husband, with Tom. Julie finds the locket, and now this is where, okay, if you're going to be nosy and creep around, don't drop shit. Because Nora found the locket.
You mean Julie.
And she dropped it in the fire.
Julie did.
Julie dropped the locket in the fire.
At first, the way they cut to it so quick, I thought she threw it in at first. It's like, oh, no, she didn't throw it. She dropped it. But still,
I wasn't sure if she was dropping it into the 1960 fire or the 2010 fire. At this point, I was just lost.
Well, I think the space-time continuum got confused because a piece of metal dropped into a fireplace wouldn't start sparking the way this thing did.
In 1960.
In both realms, yeah.
I'm confused now.
It started sparking in 1960.
At least something's here. It's got some spark. Oh!
So the Nora's upstairs packing. She's done with him. And, okay, this is another controversial part. Because the husband goes up and he's yelling at her and he pushes her. Mm-hmm. I was like, violence against women on a Hallmark movie? What?
Yeah, so a few minutes ago I looked this up. When this movie came out, it was about a year before Hallmark sort of moved into the very focused direction that they're still in today. So this is like one of the last holdovers of, we're not quite sure what we are as a channel.
Right, no. Okay.
Well, they decided we're not going to be this. Mm-hmm.
So then,
would it be funny if this were the straw that broke the camel's back? Like, they were making plenty of money, but they just didn't like the way the network was going. They're like, we can't do these kind of movies anymore. This is just so bad. Like, let's do something else.
Christmas.
It probably was.
How about Christmas? Yeah.
There should be a Christmas version of this movie.
OMG, I would watch that.
Well, because then Santa Claus would be involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be coming down the chimney in 2010, popping out in 1960.
Oh, so the 1960 house, because of the locket, catches on fire. Nora's in packing, and then she sees smoke, like, coming out of a vent.
Oh, yeah, because the husband
locks her in her room, locks her in the bedroom. And so the house catches on fire. She's yelling, help, help. So Brian is in the garden, and he hears Nora yelling for help. Then Brian goes, and he breaks into the house, and all of a sudden, he's in the 60s.
I question the vent, and there are handier people than me listening, but I'm curious, like, was a house in the 60s, did they have vents throughout like that? Like, that looked like HVAC. That looked like they had heating and air throughout the house. Was that a thing back then?
I don't know.
Because it was like a floor vent. Wouldn't that be air conditioning?
Yeah, I guess. Well, somebody on IMDb pointed out that the ivy on the house never changes. It's the same exact kind of ivy from 1960 to 2010.
Yeah.
So thanks, IMDb, for ruining the movie even more.
People weighed in.
They weighed in.
I think when you watch something like this, you want to have someone to commiserate with. This is why we do a podcast.
Oh, IMDb is on it.
So then Brian knocks Thomas out. And then he goes to save her. And then I was like, okay. Then I was kind of like, okay, Thomas, what kind of Hallmark man are you? Because another Hallmark man would have just busted down the door. But no, Thomas needed the key.
Yeah.
So...
I would have busted down the door.
So he ran down.
I'm a Hallmark man.
Dig the key out of Thomas's pocket as Thomas is laying there, splayed out.
Yeah.
He then gets the key, unlocks the door. They run downstairs, but then Thomas is waiting with a gun. Thomas then shoots the gun, and Nora disappears. Julie, meanwhile, is like, what the hell is going on? And then he yells at Julie, and he tells Julie, you have no idea what you've done. And Julie's like, what are you talking about, weirdo?
What are you talking about, Willis?
So then he starts telling Julie the story, and Julie is like, do I need to send you to rehab? Like, Julie's looking at him. And then he dumps Julie. He ends things with her.
Yeah, they break up after they broke up.
Yeah.
And I wrote, that's a real pain in the ass.
So then he runs to the phone book, and he finds Thomas's name in the phone book, and the Thomas's name changes to Nora's name right in front of his eyes.
Yeah.
So then he's like, oh my gosh, I did it, I did it, I saved her. So then he goes to Nora's house, and we find out that Nora actually was just taken to the nursing home. So he goes to the nursing home with flowers. He finds her. She's really old.
Yeah.
But then he finds her, but she's still in good spirit. She's very sassy. Not like before. She's sassy now. And she's like, what's 50 years between friends?
Let's do it.
And then he gives her the locket. And then I wrote, aww, because then her husband comes out and it's Frank. Her and Frank got married.
Yes, which I thought was cute.
Frank, me and this Brian guy going to the room. Go bareback. It's over for me.
Then, okay, did you say bareback?
Turn on that Adriana Grande record while we're bumping ugly.
Oh my gosh.
I'll treat you to some applesauce.
You know, Frank's a handy man. I bet he's really good with his caulk.
He can go hold his caulk. I want the piece of this young Brian.
Okay, so this part, I'm thinking, how are they going to, okay, how are they going to end this? They can't hook up. How are they going to, how is this
going to Harold and Maude kind of thing?
Right. Because he gives her back the locket, and I'm like, okay, how are they going to wind this down? And then she's like, you know what? I want you to meet my granddaughter.
Ooh.
And her granddaughter shows up, and her granddaughter looks exactly like the Nora from the 60s. And she gives the granddaughter the locket, and then he was like, you want to go for a walk?
Ooh.
So basically, she hooks him up with her granddaughter.
Yeah.
The end.
The IMDb told me that old woman we just were talking about, she's dead. A month before the movie was shown, she died.
Aww.
If I were her, I would not want to stick around to see this either.
No.
Of everything that I disliked about this movie, and there was a lot, and the end of the movie infuriated me and confused me even more, because we're supposed to believe this entire movie that that Nora and Brian are basically loves of each other's lives, even though they live in these like separate timelines. So then he meets her, and they have meets her in the present day, and they have this nice moment, and they share a nice moment. She still sends him off with her granddaughter. Like, hey, love of my life, go be with my granddaughter, because that's not creepy. While simultaneously, Frank, her husband for these past 50 years, knows he's not the love of her life, because this other guy who isn't even alive for another 50 years is the love of her life.
Well, Oh, and then she explained.
That's me hitting my head on the microphone on purpose.
She kept her name in the phone book because she knew that he'd find her.
Right. Hey, honey, I don't want to take your name because I'm in love with somebody else who isn't alive yet.
Oh, yeah. She kept herself in the phone book.
Yeah. Well.
Well. It was an unexpected journey through the edge of the garden.
Yeah. So Kurt,
I'll say, I wanted to say, based on last week's movie, the Mommy Group Murder, I was asking about beards, because the two guys have beards, and I said, do they soften their beards? And last week I got myself some beard conditioner.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So I put it on this morning for the first time. So Hallmark and Lifetime, this podcast is changing my life.
We're queer-eyeing you.
Right.
Very slowly. Instead of a half-hour episode, it's like a year.
Yes.
Jason, it's funny you mentioned Queer Eye. Because, okay, Kurt, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned that you did not know who Kristen Chenoweth, who I think is a gay icon in a way.
Mm-hmm. No, I think I know who she is. She's on Broadway, and I know she's an actress.
Okay.
There was someone else I didn't know. There was like a decorator woman.
Marie Kondo.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I was actually more surprised by that one, only because she's been talked about so much in pop culture the past couple of months.
So, Kurt, though, you were ambiguous about, like, you weren't sure who Kristen Chenoweth is.
I don't know what she looks like offhand.
Okay, well, you're going to find out. Because, believe it or not, Kristen Chenoweth was on a Lifetime movie.
Okay.
So,
I love her.
The next movie that we're going to watch, so Kurt, you can be informed and educated on Kristen Chenoweth, the next movie that we are going to watch on Lifetime is The 12 Men of Christmas.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
Seriously, making us watch a Christmas movie in April, really? Or what will this be? It'll be April. Yeah,
April.
It's Kristen Chenoweth. It's 12 hot men.
I thought you were gonna say the 12 men of Kristen Chenoweth.
I what is this, a Hallmark or Lifetime movie?
It's a Lifetime movie.
Okay. I should point out, just as a point of context, that the last time we watched a Lifetime Christmas movie starring a blonde Broadway actress known for the Broadway musical Wicked, it was that terrible Megan Hilty movie.
Which one was that? I don't remember.
The okay, one with the shoes, the Santa boots or whatever.
Oh.
Let me give you the synopsis, and okay. maybe this will sway you. If not, we can pick something else.
I do like Kristen Chenoweth, so.
Okay, right. Listen to the synopsis. All right.
A
high-powered New York City publicist finds herself in Montana promoting a charity calendar after being betrayed by her boss and fiancé. Unfortunately, matters of the heart are just as complicated in the wilds as they are in the big city.
Well, I am swayed.
Wait, so sorry, she goes from the big city to the country and it's Christmas? If only we had ever seen a movie like this before.
Oh, Lord. Sure.
You know who's in it?
Kristen Chenoweth.
Kristen Chenoweth.
Anna Chlumsky.
Oh, I love her.
Really?
Yeah.
From iGirl, right?
And Veep.
Veep.
She's on Veep.
Yeah, okay. She's on Veep.
Okay, who else? Is that it? Oh,
I'm looking. Okay, so Kristen Chenoweth.
Well, that's...
Ooh, Josh Hopkins, who's very
hot. A respectable cast.
Anna Chlumsky.
Yeah.
Who else?
She's in it twice.
Oh, Jesse from The Bachelor.
Jesse from The Bachelor.
Is June Squibb in this one, too?
Please. I haven't seen a good June Squibb movie in a while. I'm... Pro Squib.
Let's see who else.
I'm Squib ride or die.
This Edge, what is it called? Edge of the Garden?
Yes.
This is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Worse than Elevator Girl?
It's really bad. I don't know. If maybe I wasn't in the mood for it either, but it's just so boring.
I just don't think it knew what it was. It was trying to do too many things and wasn't doing any of them particularly well.
Right.
The people weren't necessarily bad. It seemed like they were, you know, good actors actually in it.
Yeah,
playing the,
yeah. I think Santa's boots was worse than this.
Well, I don't remember.
Yeah.
What was Santa's boots? What happened?
No, Santa's boots was pretty bad. Really?
Maybe it was worse. I don't remember
June
what happened.
June Squibb was
boots.
In Santa's boots, and it still wasn't good.
Oh yeah, June Squibb was in it, and yeah. Something. There was a parade, and I don't know.
Anywho,
Kurt, too tired. That's the problem. Yes?
We better let you go to bed.
Please. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
All right.
I almost passed out at 7 o'clock. It's 11 here. 11:06 on the East Coast.
Well, you guys, we need to let Kurt go to bed.
Yes.
But you know what? Do us a favor. Give us a review. Give us a 5-star review because, yes. After all, Kurt has sacrificed his sleep for this podcast.
That's right.
So.
And I sacrificed sleep to watch that movie. I would have much rather been sleeping during that.
See, there you go. See what we do for you?
Yeah, see?
We're
working hard.
If you want to get a hold of us, you can.
Nerdocracy.
You can find me on Facebook at Les Kirkendall Barrett, or on Instagram at Kirkendall, or you can go to our show page on Instagram, Lifetime of Hallmark Podcast, or on Facebook at A Lifetime of Hallmark. Jason.
I am on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Big Shot Jason. Big Shot Jason.
And Kurt.
You can see the TV pilot I made at campusmartiustv.com.
Did we post that on our Facebook page? We should.
Yes. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Because I'll share it to our Facebook page if that's okay with you, Kurt.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Spread it around. I have a Campus Martius Facebook page as well. And that's it. I also have KurtFitzpatrick.com, but I don't think the pilot's up on that. I should
rectify that.
Yeah, but it's on, like I said, it's on the other, other platforms.
And I don't know about you guys, But I'm like noticing, like especially like in Instagram, I'm noticing followers, and my followers have gone up, and it's people who I don't know. And the Lifetime of Hallmark Facebook page is getting a lot of looks.
Oh, good.
So it's working.
That's good. Spread the love. Yeah, I've my very personal good. Instagram. There are days where I would get a ton of new followers, like out of the blue. So I don't know. I'm sure some of that is just spam, because a lot of those go away in a couple days. But I'm also getting like what looks like legitimate people that I don't know following me. So thank you if that's you.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I listened to another podcast, and I belong to a Facebook group on the other podcast, and one of the listeners on the other podcast is like, "Oh, I listened to your podcast." So there you go.
Oh, sweet.
Well, good morning.
So the word is getting out. Anyway, good night, Kurt.
Good night.
Jason, I'll talk to you next week.
Good night.
And if you guys want to watch the movie that we're going to watch next week, once again, it's The 12 Men of Christmas. Alrighty, bye.
Bye.
Bye.